Aren't you glad that you're a Christian? Okay, let's say last week's memory verse together. Matthew 24, 35, 36, it says, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone." Good. With the coronavirus pandemic, there's a lot of talk and debate about medicines and treatments and vaccines and so forth. Well, I don't know about all that. We'll just have to wait and see. But I do know what Proverbs 17:22 says. "A joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones." Did you know studies have shown that happy people are generally healthier than unhappy ones? There are several scientifically validated health advantages that if you do some research, you'll discover to optimism and to happiness, like a stronger immune system, lower stress levels, lower blood pressure, lower likelihood of heart disease, better pain mitigation, and longer life. And then, of course, there's the point that Proverbs 15:15 makes. "All the days of the afflicted are bad, but a cheerful heart has a continual feast." Or as one version puts it, "For the happy heart, life is a continual feast." Do you love life? Do you see it as a continual feast? Now, most people want to be happy. You're going to be hard-pressed to find someone who says, "Yeah, well, no, I'm not really into that happiness thing. Happiness, that may be okay for some folks, but it's not for me." Our founding fathers, they even wrote it into the Declaration of Independence. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." It's been pointed out that those who say they don't want to be happy, well, they find a certain happiness in their unhappiness. Just a bit of trivia. The shortest verse in the Greek text is not "Jesus wept," but rather 1 Thessalonians 5:16, "Rejoice always." The word for joy is found over 120 times in the New Testament in its various forms. As Dr. Leon Morris commented, "Indeed, few things about the New Testament church are more remarkable than this continual stress on joy." There must be a reason why it's used so much. That little word, it must have great meaning and importance for the Christian life. There is a place for fear. But Christianity is, in fact, a joyful religion. Jesus didn't come to make us miserable. The gospel is good news, not bad news. When Jesus was born, the angels said, "I bring you good news of a great joy, which shall be for all the people," Luke 2:10. And in John 17:13, Jesus said, "These things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy made full in themselves." Now, the word for joy is found 16 times in the little letter of Philippians, in its noun form joy or its verb form rejoice. And some versions translate it a bit different from time to time, but it's there 16 times in the Greek. Because of that, it's often given the moniker the Epistle of Joy. But there's a verse I want us to take note of in chapter 4 that I think is very important. "Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence and if anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things." So I'd like to start a mini-series today on this good medicine from Proverbs 17:22, having a positive attitude, a cheerful disposition, a happy spirit. some people, they just seem to be born that way. But I think the majority of us, we have to work pretty hard to attain such a spirit. We're normally grumpy and negative. And the older we get, the harder it is to change. And so I really think we need to try to instill this in our children when they're young. The first thing I want to point out is that happiness, I believe, is a choice. Supposedly, it was Abraham Lincoln who put it like this. Most people are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. And I think that's right. Dr. Sonia Lubomirsky is a social psychologist whose extensive research on happiness resulted in this graph. Now, according to her research, unlike what most people would think, only 10% of our happiness comes from our life circumstances. 50% comes from our genetics, and 40% comes from our intentional activities, meaning that 40% of our capacity for happiness is within ourselves to change. That's a large chunk. I read about a man who was very uneducated who somehow got on a national talk show, and he really stole the show from the MC with his zest and his happiness. And the MC, recognizing this, asked him, "Sir, how is it that you have all this exuberance?" And the man answered, "Well, you see, it's this way. Each morning I get up and I have two choices, one to be happy and one not to be happy, and I ain't as dumb as you think. It's a lot more fun being happy, so I choose to be happy." It's like the old Roger Miller song, where he's talking about some things you can't do. You can't roller skate in a buffalo herd. You can't drive around with a tiger in your car. You can't change film with a kid on your back. And after each one, he says, "But you can be happy if you've a mind to." Now, I believe this is especially true for Christians. We are commanded to rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I will say, rejoice, Philippians 4:4. The second aspect of the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5 is joy. Joy is commanded. And thus, it's not just an emotion that comes from our earthly circumstances that change from hour to hour. It's an attitude. It's a mindset more than a feeling. For most people, it seems that their happiness is connected to chance. In fact, if you look it up in the dictionary, the root word for happy, hap, means chance. If it's a beautiful day outside, then they're happy. If they get a bunch of likes on social media, then they're happy. If their business is doing well, then they're happy. If they win a lottery or a raffle, then they're happy. If the preacher decides to shorten his sermon a bit, well, then they're happy. As it's been said, happiness depends on what happens, but not for Christians. Our joy is a deep inward joy based on things that are eternal, things that cannot be taken away from us by the world. I like what Nat Cooper, one of my old teachers, would say. It's not what happens to you in life that matters, it's what happens in you. Because if what happens in you is right, then what happens to you doesn't matter. The fact that Paul was in prison when he wrote it makes the theme of joy in the book of Philippians pretty remarkable. Biblical joy does not depend on others or external circumstances. It comes from within. One ship goes east, another goes west, by the selfsame winds that blow. 'Tis the set of the sail and not the gale that determines the way they go. Like the waves of the sea or the winds of fate, as we voyage along through life, 'tis the set of the soul that determines the goal and not the calm or the strife. Ella Wilcox. So you can find people who in life, they've been dealt the worst cards. And yet they're generally cheerful and happy people. And then you can find people who have been dealt the best of cards in life, and they're just utterly miserable. And you may have heard the illustration of the boy who was asked if he was happy. He said, "No, I won't be happy until I've graduated from high school and gone to college." Well, he was then asked in college if he was happy. He said, No, I won't be happy until I've graduated from college and secured a good job. Well, after he had secured a good job, he was asked again if he was happy. He said, no, I won't be happy until I get married and have a family. Well, after he had a family, he was asked again if he was happy. He said, no, I won't be happy until I'm retired. You see, he was never going to be happy. I really believe happiness is a choice. You may be saying, well, I want to be happy. I want to have that joy. What can help me become happy? And I'm glad you asked, because I am going to give you some suggestions on how to be happy. There are too many people, as the song says, looking for love in all the wrong places. Well, there's also too many people looking for happiness in all the wrong places. How to be happy? Number one, you need to get the gratitude attitude. In Colossians chapter 2, verses 6 and 7, we are told, therefore, as you have received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk in him, having been firmly rooted and now being built up in him and established in your faith, just as you were instructed, and overflowing with gratitude. In Colossians 4, 2, we read, devote yourselves to prayer, keeping alert in it with an attitude of thanksgiving. And in 1 Thessalonians 5, 16 through 18, it says, rejoice always, pray without ceasing, in everything give thanks, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. There's a great old song that we sing called Win Upon Life's Billows, or Count Your Blessings, depending on the book. And it goes like this. When upon life's billows you are tempest-tossed, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost, count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord hath done. Are you ever burdened with a load of care? Does the cross seem heavy you are called to bear? Count your many blessings, every doubt will fly, and you will be singing as the days go by. So amid the conflict, whether great or small, do not be discouraged. God is over all. Count your many blessings. Angels will attend, help and comfort give you till your journey's end. Count your blessings. Name them one by one. Count your blessings. See what God hath done. Count your blessings. Name them one by one. Count your many blessings. See what God hath done. I agree with Professor Walter Adney. We fix our thoughts on our trouble to the neglect of a thousand blessings. And I like the saying, never allow what you don't have keep you from being thankful for what you do have. Fanny Crosby, the blind songwriter, wrote this about her condition at the age of 8 years old. Oh, what a happy soul am I, although I cannot see, I am resolved that in this world, contented I will be. How many blessings I enjoy that other people don't. To weep and sigh because I'm blind, I cannot and I won't. Complaining just dampens spirits. You know, people who are full of gloom and despair, they're not very fun to be around. Are you a pessimist? Well, it's probably because you don't count your blessings. As I've mentioned before, I was at a lectureship where Willard Tate was talking about a college class that he taught really early in the morning. The students came in, and the first thing he told them to do was get out a sheet of paper and write down 12 good things that happened that day. And oh, they started complaining. You know, I've only been awake for 30 minutes and things like that. And he said, all right. He woke up this morning and you were alive. Is that a good thing? Write that down. And you opened your eyes and you could see. Is that a good thing? And you got out of bed and you could walk. And you didn't have to go down to the river. You just turned the tap and you had instant hot water. And you see, it's really not that difficult to find 12 good things, even in the first 30 minutes of your day. It's been said that it's backwards to have only one day a year for Thanksgiving and 364 for grumbling. And for the Christian, the blessings always outnumber, always outweigh the troubles. If nothing else, in every situation, we can thank God for his salvation in Jesus Christ. As William Barclay put it, there is always something for which to give thanks. Even on the darkest day, there are blessings to count. We must remember that if we face the sun, the shadows will fall behind us. But if we turn our backs on the sun, all the shadows will be in front. It's been said that this is the secret to a happy life. It's not the happy people who are thankful. It's the thankful people who are happy. May we never be like the 9 lepers in Luke chapter 17. They didn't return to thank Jesus and to glorify God. Let's make Thanksgiving a real part of our lives. Let's try to make sure that we use it in every prayer. Before bed, I always tell my kids to make sure that they thank God for 3 things that happened that day. You might want to try it. Now, another thing that you can try is the 21-day gratitude challenge. Each day, you write down 3 new things you're thankful for. Well, motivational speaker Sean Acor, he was talking about this in a TED Talk called The Happy Secret to Better Work, which you might want to watch. He said, "We found there are ways you can train your brain to become more positive. In just a 2-minute span of time, done for 21 days in a row, we can actually rewire your brain, allowing your brain to work more optimistically and more successfully." So, okay, what happens to the people who do it? He said, at the end of that, their brain starts to retain a pattern of scanning the world not for the negative, but for the positive first. You want to be happy? You need to get the gratitude attitude. Number 2, you need to think on heaven daily. Think of stepping on shore and finding it heaven, of taking hold of a hand and finding it God's hand, of breathing a new air and finding it celestial air, of feeling invigorated and finding it immortality, of passing from storm and tempest to an unbroken calm, of looking up and finding it home. Myrtle Erickson. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, Paul talked about the second coming of Christ, when the Christians, both dead and alive, will be caught up together in the clouds with the Lord. Well, he concluded by saying, therefore, comfort one another with these words. I think we need to be doing that more. Romans 12:12 mentions rejoicing in hope. That's our hope of heaven. And as you know, biblical hope is not, I wish I may, I wish I might, cross your fingers and hope for the best. The English word, of course, reflects a measure of doubt. But no, biblical hope, on the other hand, is desire plus expectation. It's that feeling you get as a little kid when your family is talking about the upcoming vacation, or your class is talking about the upcoming field trip, the expectation, the excitement. That's how we ought to feel when we think and we talk about heaven. It's really coming. In Matthew 5:12, Jesus said, "Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great." And as he said to the 70, that he gave miraculous powers and sent out, "Nevertheless, do not rejoice in this, that the spirits are subject to you, but rejoice that your names are recorded in heaven." Luke 10:20. So, what's it going to be like? Well, we get a few poetic glimpses in the book of Revelation. For example, in chapter 7, it says, "They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither shall the sun beat down on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb in the center of the throne shall be their shepherd, and shall guide them to springs of the water of life, and God shall wipe every tear from their eyes." And in Revelation 21:4, we read, "And he shall wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall no longer be any death, there shall no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away." This is what we need to be looking to. In 2 Corinthians 4, Paul talked about the difficulties he faced, his ministry and himself personally. But the fact that he still did not lose heart, a statement he made in verse 1 and verse 16. He said, "Therefore, we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory, far beyond all comparison, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal." It's like the camping illustration. When you go camping, you can put up with a lot of stuff, like sleeping on the ground and bathing in the river, etc., because you know that it's just temporary and that you get to go home in a few days. And so when we think about heaven, it helps us to remember that we're only sojourners here. It's kind of like we're camping. In Philippians 3, and it seems that Paul was painting a picture of a race, and he said, "Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it yet. But one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." Not looking back, of course, is important in a lot of different sports. And think about Paul. Man, the guy had quite a past. But as he taught us, we need to get forgiven and forget about it. We need to be looking and pressing forward now to what's coming, the prize. I like the old saying, "Every morning lean thine arms upon the windowsill of heaven and gaze upon thy Lord. Then with a vision in your heart, turn strongly to meet thy day." You want to be happy? You need to get the gratitude attitude, and you need to think on heaven daily. But that's not all. All right, next week we are going to get into a few more. We're going to look at a few more suggestions on how to be happy. The thing is, Christians have more to be happy about than anyone else on earth. Psalm 32, 10 and 11. "Many are the sorrows of the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord, loving kindness shall surround him. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous ones, and shout for joy, all you who are upright in heart." It's been said that it only takes 17 muscles to smile as compared to 43 muscles to frown. And that's quite a workout. Now, if you look it up, you'll discover that's an urban legend. It seems that the numbers are actually quite a bit less and fairly comparable. But I get the point. Ecclesiastes 3:22. "I have seen that nothing is better than that man should be happy in his activities." As Phil Robertson would say, happy, happy, happy. That good medicine, the positive attitude, cheerful disposition, and happy spirit can be yours.